Well, it's good to see everybody brave, beautiful weather be out here tonight. It is good to see everyone. I guess ever since there's been a post office, there's probably been children that have wrote letters to God. A few of those letters go like this. In Sunday school, they told us what you do. What does it, or who does it when you're on vacation? Another little girl wrote and said, "Thank you for the baby brother, but I prayed for a puppy." Another one said, "Did you mean for giraffes to look like that, or was that by mistake?" And then finally one said, "Dear God, I think about you sometimes, even when I'm not praying." Well, when children write letters like that, they reveal what we call a childlike faith. They may not understand things about life that goes on around them, but they never doubt that God is there and that He cares for them. But as we get older, things change. Life can disappoint us. Dreams get damaged. We experience pain and loss and rejection. And people hurt us. And when things like that happen, we tend to lose our innocence and trust we had as children. I think that's why in 1 Peter 5:7, Peter writes to adult Christians to cast all your anxieties upon Him because He cares for you. Because as Christians, we need to focus on the faith that we had as children, because God never changes. He's still the same God that we knew as children, and He still cares for us. If you want to turn over to 1 Kings chapter 19, we're going to be in 1 Kings chapter 19 for this sermon. There we're introduced, 1 Kings we're introduced to Elijah. And Elijah performed miracles. He brought the dead back to life. He ascended into heaven in a fiery chariot. And to this day, the Jewish people speak of him with reverence as the most prominent prophet of the Old Testament era. But he was also a man who struggled with this idea that God cared for him. Now, just before 1 Kings chapter 19, Elijah had preached one of the greatest sermons of his life. He had confronted 400 prophets of Baal at Mount Carmel and exposed them as false prophets that they were. And because of Elijah's faith and obedience, God then sent fire down from heaven to consume the sacrifice that Elijah had placed on the altar. Then a few hours later, God sent a downpour of rain on land that hadn't had rain for 3 years because God had brought judgment on the land of Israel and upon the evil king and queen who ruled it. Those were exciting days for Elijah. Of course, not everybody was pleased with what Elijah did on that day. One of the people that he upset was Queen Jezebel, and she was furious. Elijah had embarrassed her, and of course he had killed her favorite hand-picked pagan priests. And so she was out for blood, specifically Elijah's blood. And so she sends Elijah a message that essentially said, "By this time tomorrow, you're going to be dead." And everybody knows at this point that Jezebel's been good for that because she's killed a whole lot of prophets of God before this. And so Elijah runs away. He runs away like a dog with his tail tucked between its legs. He runs and he runs and he runs until he's so exhausted that he just collapses under a broom tree. And he just lies there, so embarrassed by his cowardice that he wants to die. Elijah, this great man of faith, this man of miracles and great deeds, has lost his childlike faith in the God that cared for him. Now, in the book of James, in James 5:17, we're told there that Elijah was a man just like us. And so, that being, he was just like you and me. Now, granted, he did things that you and I could only dream of doing, the miracles, the raising of the dead, things like that. But he was still governed by the same passions and emotions that we are. And I think that's something that God wants us to remember. You see, God could have just told us all the great stuff in Elijah's life, the miracles, the battles that he won, and the prayers God answered. But that's not what God does. God also saw fit to include the story of this great man becoming so afraid that he ran for his life. But one of the reasons God included this part of Elijah's story in the Bible is because we need to realize that God cared for him just the same as he cares for us. Verse 5 there of chapter 19, you'll notice what God does first for Elijah. It says, "And he, Elijah, lay down and slept under a broom tree. And behold, an angel touched him and said to him, 'Arise and eat.' And he looked, and behold, there was at his head a head of cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. He ate and drank and lay down again. And the angel of the Lord came a second time and touched him and said, 'Arise and eat, for the journey is too great for you.'" Now you think about this. Elijah had lost his faith, and he's very verbal about this idea that he doesn't think God cares anymore, and that God hasn't lived up to his part of the bargain. And some might think that God would be upset and tell Elijah, "What's wrong with you? Where is your faith? Get up on your feet and act like a man." But that's not what God does. Instead, God sends an angel to make sure Elijah has food and drink. And then he lets Elijah sleep. And then the angel returns a second time to feed him. Oh, what's going on here? Why would God just step back and do nothing? Why didn't God try to reason with Elijah and give him a lesson in faith? Why just let him sleep? Well, God did that because that's what Elijah needed. There are times that we don't need answers, times that we don't need theology, a time when explanations are sometimes worse than worthless. Sometimes what we need is to just back off. We need to rest. As I just look at here in 1 Kings 19, it kind of seems that Elijah ran because he panicked. And so you do an internet search on things about panic, and you find this. You find that panic attacks are periods of extreme fear that cause physical symptoms such as a racing heart, or sweating, trembling. Panic attacks are often accompanied by a feeling of impending threat of harm or even death. Well, how do you deal with panic? Well, the Mayo Clinic says that one of the ways to deal with panic is to make sure that you make sleep a priority. Another source says that not getting enough sleep is one of the top things that can trigger or worsen anxiety. So I think God gave Elijah what he needed. He needed time to rest. He needed time to sleep. And I think that's the reason God did that was because he cared for Elijah. But sleep wasn't going to be enough. Sleep alone wasn't going to take care of the fundamental problem that caused Elijah's anxiety. Elijah desperately needed to know that God cared for him. And now that may seem a little bit odd for Elijah, this man of great faith and miracles, to have this crisis of faith. But we need to remember that he was a man just like us. And yes, he had experienced God's power and influence, but in the very face of a real threat, Elijah had forgotten all that God had done for him in the past. And now he was frozen in his faithlessness, and it threatened to destroy him. And I think what was causing this crisis of faith for Elijah were two lies. And these two lies had convinced him that God didn't care for him anymore. The first lie was this, that God needs me. Elijah had come to believe that he was indispensable to God. Later, God would ask Elijah, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" And Elijah would reply in verse 10 that "I have been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with sword. And I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away." Well, what was Elijah saying here? He was saying, "I'm the only one who stands in the gap. I'm important. If something happens to me, well, then God's going to be in trouble." Essentially, Elijah was telling God that he was indispensable. Sort of reminds me of the story I read about a preacher trying to teach a youth group of Sunday school class about the 23rd Psalm. And he had really impressed upon them this idea of the sheep and the flock and the shepherd. And then he asked who the shepherd of the sheep were. And he had kind of expected the kids to say he was. And one of the kids raised his hand and said, "Jesus is the shepherd." And that shocked the preacher, mostly because it was true. But he was so flustered that he couldn't help himself. And he blurted out, "Well, then who am I?" And the little kid said, "Well, I guess you're the sheepdog." Well, I guess Elijah had to come to the conclusion, or he had come to the conclusion, that he was a very important man, that God needed him, that God didn't have anyone else to rely on, but God set him straight. Verse 18 of 1 Kings 19 says, "I have reserved 7,000 in Israel, all whose knee had not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him." In other words, Elijah, you're not the only one left. And I do have others there. I'm the shepherd, and you're my sheepdog. But Elijah had forgotten that. He had forgotten who God was, and he had forgotten really who he was. And when we forget that God is the shepherd and that we are the sheepdog, we tend to get depressed, because we will begin to believe that, everything depends on us in our lives and our families and our jobs and the church. We forget to trust God and to believe success is totally dependent on His will. And sometimes when things don't go right, we can be overwhelmed because our faith has centered on ourselves. And when we focus, when our focus is centered on ourselves, well, we tend to be pretty disappointed. We can't do it all by ourselves. And any effort based on that concept, is doomed to lead us to anxiety, depression, and even panic. So that was the first lie, that God needed Elijah. Any one of us can fall into that same trap. We just need to remember that, God doesn't need you or me to get things done. He just allows us to come along for the ride so that we can sense the thrill of His power in our lives. But Elijah had also bought into a second lie that was just as bad. And that second lie is actually summed up by a popular saying. You probably know it. I'll quote it. It says, "God helps those who do what? Who help themselves," right? Now, everybody quotes that almost as if it were true, but it's not. It's totally false. It's unbiblical. If God helped those who helped themselves, well, Judas would have to be a patron saint of something, because Judas helped himself a lot, and he was nowhere near a good example for us. God doesn't help those who help themselves. God helps those who obey Him and follow Him. But in that false teaching is the deceptive implication that if I do my part, then what? Then God has to do His part. It's kind of like an unwritten contract. I did my thing, now God owes me. But if God doesn't do what I want Him to do when I want Him to do it, well, then it's obvious that He doesn't care, or He doesn't have the power to protect me. And that's what's dogging Elijah's thoughts here. He thought that this victory against the prophets of Baal at Mount Carmel had been the knockout blow for King Ahab and Queen Jezebel. I don't know if you've ever seen a boxing match. I'm assuming we all have. But every once in a while, you'll see an inexperienced boxer, and he can throw his best punch and drop his opponent to the mat, only to see the other boxer climb back to his feet and come back like he had never been touched. That's what happened to Elijah. He had thrown his best punch, thinking this would be the end of the conflict for all time. But apparently, someone had forgot to inform Jezebel. Jezebel comes back at him with a very serious threat. She's a scary woman, and she's put a number of God's prophets to death, and now she's threatened Elijah. And as a result, Elijah begins to doubt God's power. So God says, "Listen, Elijah, let me show you something." And verses 11 and 12 says, "The Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore the mountains and broke into pieces the rocks before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper." Now God's saying two things here. First, God was saying, not only am I big enough to tear this mountain apart, but I'm big enough to take out Jezebel anytime I want to. And right now, I don't want to. Sometimes our calendar and God's calendar really aren't on the same page. But when God is ready, I don't think you would want to be on His bad side. Even Thomas Jefferson, who was not particularly a religious man, once said that I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and that his justice cannot sleep forever. So we see here that there was a massive wind and an earthquake and a fire followed by the sound of a low whisper. Well, what's all that about? Well, too often people view God as this harsh and unsympathetic person to their needs or being to their needs. They see him as a swift, powerful, merciless being in judgment, like what is symbolized here with the wind and earthquake and fire. But notice God wasn't in any of those things. God was in the whisper. The whisper was like the soft voice of a parent whose child comes to him with that owie looking for comfort and healing. The whisper was God's way of saying, I understand, I care, and I'll take care of you. And I'll close with a story that I know I've told before, but there was a 13-year-old girl, Natalie Gilbert, who was scheduled to perform the national anthem at a Portland Trailblazers basketball game. She had a beautiful voice and had sung the anthem numerous times at other public events. And as she began those familiar words, the Star Spangled Banner, none of those words popped into her brain. Just couldn't happen for her, and so she stood silent, shocked, facing the humiliation of being in front of a live TV audience, and then thousands of people in the crowd. But that's when, at that time, the Portland Trailblazers coach, Mo Cheeks, walked up beside her. He put his arm around her shoulders and began to whisper the words in her ear. And when the whispering didn't work, he began to sing along and motioned for the crowd to sing along as well. One Sunday morning commentator news show said that one little girl, an off-key coach, and 20,000 people finished it together. Well, what happened that night was a coach caring so much for a scared little girl that he whispered just the words that she needed to hear. Cheeks would later say that I didn't want her to be out there all alone. Well, one last thing. We have something that Elijah did not. We have the same still voice whispering in our ear from God who cares deeply for us. But Elijah couldn't look upon God. We can. When God took on the flesh and died on the cross for us and rose from the grave in victory, we can now look at the face of Jesus and know that he cared for us. The writer of Hebrews in Hebrews 12:2 says, let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. If you're not a Christian, now would be the opportune time to come forward and be baptized. If you are a Christian and need the prayers of the congregation, we'll offer this time up to you as well, as together we stand and we sing.